What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Dylan LeClaire is the senior market analyst at UTXO Management. He also writes a newsletter with Bitcoin Magazine. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin, on-chain metrics. We talk about Bitcoin's price, the market structure, and what to expect in the coming weeks. I really enjoyed this conversation with Dylan, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by FTX US. FTX.us is the safe, regulated way to buy and sell Bitcoin and other digital assets. You can trade crypto with up to 85% lower fees than top competitors. There are no fixed minimum fees, no ACH transaction fees, and no withdrawal fees either. FTX.us is also the only leading exchange that supports both Ethereum and Solana NFTs. Download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP to earn these free crypto on every trade over $10. The more you trade, the more you earn. Go download the FTX app today and use referral code POMP. Today's episode is brought to you by Brave. Brave Wallet is the first secure crypto wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. What's Web3? Web3 is freedom from big tech and Wall Street, more control and better privacy. But there's a weak point in Web3, your crypto wallet. Most wallets are browser extensions, a Web2 technology. That means the same old risks, app spoofing, phishing scams, and theft. Brave Wallet is different. Brave Wallet is the first secure wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. No extension required. With Brave Wallet, you can buy, store, send, and swap assets, manage NFTs, even connect other wallets and dApps, all from the security of the best privacy browser on the market. Whether you're new to crypto or a seasoned pro, it's time to ditch those risky extensions. It's time to switch to Brave Wallet. Download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started. Again, go download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started. Today's episode is brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline.ag is the top spot for all of your sports betting, casino, and poker needs. It's available on your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. BetOnline accepts Bitcoin and more than a dozen altcoins to make deposits and withdraw your winnings. There are no crypto fees, processing only takes minutes, and transactions are 100% anonymous and secure. Head over to betonline.ag and sign up today to receive a 100% crypto bonus on your first deposit. Just use ARC promo code POMP100 to get started. Discover why everyone is saying BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager with crypto for sports, casino games, horse racing, poker, and more. Sign up today at betonline.ag and double your deposit with our exclusive podcast promo code POMP100. Go check them out at betonline.ag.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
But first, my friend Dylan, how are you, buddy?
What's up, Pomp? How are we doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Let's just jump right in. It feels like every time Bitcoin goes over $30,000 price point, somebody on the internet is a smart ass and says Bitcoin's never going under 30K again. And then we just go right back under. How do you feel like kind of sentiment on the internet at the moment?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I'm kind of just expecting some consolidation and chop for the rest of the month, maybe quarter, maybe even a year. I mean, that's what Bitcoin does. It was the same kind of meme around 10K. So, I mean, I'm embracing it. I love it. Consolidation is honestly one of my favorite periods, although, for like the industry, it obviously can get a little bit boring. Being a kind of a market analyst and a researcher, sometimes it gets a little boring during these consolidation periods, but I'm enjoying it.
All right. We've got the first chart here is the network hash rate, which just continues to go up and up and up. What's this showing us?
Yeah. So, I guess the overall theme of this, of today's, my slides today, is going to be kind of a public miner analysis. And we've covered this a little bit back. And since then, these miners, in USD and BTC terms have continued to fall. So I thought it'd be, cool for the audience to kind of update, this pretty simple and basic framework for how to evaluate publicly traded miners, especially as, Bitcoin, the asset continues to grow and, these publicly traded miners continue to entrench themselves in the publicly traded markets. So here's the hash rate, like you said, currently at 209 exahash a second. I just thought I'd show the entire the chart since 2012 in log scale, just to give some context. Someone correct me in the comments if I'm wrong here, but one terahash per second means a trillion hashes per second. A petahash per second means a quadrillion hashes per second, and an exahash is one quintillion. So just for some context, we're at 209 exahash per second. It's mind-boggling just how much computational power and how much actual physical hardware is maintaining, or not maintaining, but securing the Bitcoin network. And it's something that when a lot of people say, you know, Bitcoin is based in thin air, it's just internet money, they don't really understand the hardware aspect and the physical infrastructure that's actually built out.
Yeah, it always shocks me. If I ask somebody, like, what's the most valuable commodity in the world, they'll come up with whatever answer. And I say, no, actually, I think computing power is the most valuable commodity in the world. And Bitcoin is backed by computing power. And that is a weird idea. It's hard to wrap your head around it because it's new. But if you can kind of follow that logic of most valuable commodity is computing power, Bitcoin's backed by computing power, that means Bitcoin is backed by the most valuable commodity, and therefore it just furthers the thought process of Bitcoin being kind of this digital sound money. It makes a ton of sense. The next one you've got here is the Bitcoin mean hash rate, 7-day average. What's this showing?
Yeah, same chart. Just wanted to zoom in a little bit and also just kind of show the rate of change. This is in linear terms, linear scale, and it just kind of shows the China miner ban. Right, so we're still actually, I think, 20, 25, 30% above the peak before that China miner ban. So, we've highlighted this kind of V-shaped recovery a lot, but it's pretty remarkable given, you know, for the longest time, I don't know if people remember, everybody's kind of thoughts are so, everyone kind of the narrative changes so much on crypto Twitter and around Bitcoin in general. But for the longest time, it was China controls Bitcoin. Yes. Bitcoin mining is centralized in China. And now that's seemingly gone away, right? Everyone just kind of wrote that off. And Bitcoin didn't die and we're still chugging along. So, I think it's just interesting to see this. And I kind of expect this hash rate to continue to chug up regardless of what the Bitcoin price does for the rest of the year.
We've got miner revenue per terahash here. What's this showing?
Yeah, so this is kind of the basis of, again, it's an oversimplified framework for how to evaluate Bitcoin miners. But essentially, if you look at a lot of these mining charts, and especially these publicly traded miner valuations in Bitcoin terms, like we're going to do here in a second, what you see is that a lot of the charts in Bitcoin terms look very, very similar to this hash price chart. Hash price, miner revenue per terahash is just miner revenue, and you can do that in USD terms or BTC terms, divided by the hash rate, right? So because of Bitcoin's difficulty adjustment and because of its incentives that mining offers, right? You can plug in a computer anywhere in the world or an ASIC, mining rig, and anything with just a satellite signal, you can basically, get digital sound money, kind of a synthetic commodity in exchange for your energy and computational power, right? So we know this. But a lot of people don't understand that the difficulty adjustment is kind of the secret sauce here, right? With any other commodity, the more that you chase it, the more that you try to produce it, the more that you will produce. With things like gold, right? You can, the supply expands by 2% a year. If the oil price goes up like it has, a lot more operations are going to try to produce oil, right? The same with any commodity. But with Bitcoin, the difficulty adjustment limits the actual supply. So it's supply inelastic relative to demand. And so this is why evaluating these miners and looking at hash prices is very, very interesting. So we kind of are in a hash price bear market, meaning that miner margins are going down. And I think it'll be really interesting to kind of look at the miner performance relative to Bitcoin itself, relative to these hash price bull and bear markets.
Got it. And then if we take a look at the next chart you have here, you have Bitcoin and public miner stocks. Obviously, Bitcoin continuing to outperform all of these. I think at one point we had discussed that the miners were actually outperforming on the way up. Is this what your expectation would be? Is that Bitcoin would perform on the way down?
Yeah. So, essentially, a lot of these miners are levered bets on Bitcoin, right? They may have debt on their balance sheet and just how publicly traded, just how these public markets work. They're valued at a multiple of their current or trailing earnings, right? So when the Bitcoin price goes down, especially in USD terms, the expected earnings go down and the prices fall. Iris Energy is actually the only outlier here and has outperformed Bitcoin. And funny enough is that they just immediately sell their Bitcoin. So in a bear market, they're doing quite well. But what's interesting here is this is since the all-time high. So most of these miners are down 80%. This is also coincidentally, not coincidentally, just because of the data, this is during the hash price bear market, right? So hash price has gone from about 40 cents to currently around 12 cents per terahash per second per day. So we're going to look at now, we're going to look at the bull and bear markets in hash price. So when price is actually outperforming hash rate, and then we're going to look at these publicly traded miners in Bitcoin terms, right? Because Bitcoin is what we actually want. USD is great, but if we're investing in Bitcoin miners, we want to actually outperform Bitcoin itself. And so I think that's important to keep in mind.
Yeah, one of the things that is interesting is the Federal Reserve, the St. Louis Fed, recently published a piece that talks about buying eggs denominated in Bitcoin. And they thought they were trolling and kind of dunking on Bitcoin, saying it's volatile. But I think that your point there about denominating the stocks in Bitcoin, denominating the eggs in Bitcoin, like you can feel that it is changing. It's slow. It's incredibly slow. But if I told you 5 years ago that the St. Louis Fed was going to publish something talking about buying eggs in Bitcoin, you'd have laughed in my face. And now here we are. And if I tell you that they're going to write many articles 5 years from now about it, you'd laugh in my face. But let's see what happens, right?
It's kind of a cell phone too, because they published the charts and the y-axis, or the x-axis, I'm sorry, was from 2020. But the actual data went back to like 2012. So it was quite funny.
Ridiculous. All right. So we also have hash price and public miner stocks. What's this showing us?
Yeah. So I believe this is the hash price bull market. And so here we see from I think 2020, if we want to pull it up, it's showing hash price going from, I think the low was around 7 cents to around 40 cents, right? And then we see the actual equities price in BTC terms, but the bottom pane shows the percentage. So these are the publicly traded miners. I believe it's off the top of my head. I chose HUT, Riot, and Marathon. Could be wrong. I can't really see it too well. But what it's showing essentially is that these miners outperform Bitcoin by multiples when hash price was in a bull market, right? So when the price of Bitcoin is actually outpacing the growth of hash rate, essentially that's what it's showing you. And so this is when you want to buy miners. And obviously you need to bake in some assumptions, whether price is going to go up or down or whether it's going to outperform hash rate. But if you can actually, you know, through a lot of data analysis and you can, you know, a little bit of luck, let's be real, these miners are a great way to significantly outperform Bitcoin because of the debt on its balance sheet and because they're valued, especially by Wall Street, at multiples of their current earnings. And so when hash price is in a bull market, mining stocks is a great place to be in with at least a percentage of your portfolio.
Got it. And when you look, we've got another one that is the same kind of hash rate or hash price in public stocks, but it's going down. What's this showing us?
Yeah, the same thing. Not to beat a dead horse, but this is, you know, basically an interesting thing here is that hash price in BTC terms, right? We're looking at hash price throughout most of this slide deck today in USD terms. Hash price in BTC terms is actually programmed for the most part to go down forever. And that sounds somewhat crazy, but because of the supply issuance of Bitcoin, and if you assume hash rate is going to continue to go upwards, the difficulty adjustment assures that the hash price will continue to trend downwards forever, that miner revenues will trend down forever, that the marginal production cost of a Satoshi will continue to go up forever as a kind of a digital commodity. And so for these publicly traded miners, that means that the revenues and margins are going to get squeezed for a long time. So it's very, very, very challenging for really any asset, but including these publicly traded miners with public valuations to outperform Bitcoin over the long term. And so this is kind of what this is showing. So I think we're still in this kind of hash price bear market, but I think some of these miners are getting pretty interesting as kind of a value buy as we, you know, kind of trend in this bear market and their valuations continue to get crushed.
When you think about a lot of this, obviously the Fed's in control. They're tanking markets. We see stock prices coming down. The miners are not any more kind of safe, let's say, than other stocks. Are they holding up better though? Like, because Bitcoin has actually been holding at around $30,000, is there a relationship between Bitcoin's resilience and the inability to kind of fall even further, like, you know, zooms down 80, 90%, some of these like really kind of high flying growth stocks have fallen way more than Bitcoin's fallen. How do you think about the public miner stock price and its relationship to the Bitcoin price, but it's also its relationship, you know, to kind of the more macro environment?
Yeah, I think in 2021, there's a lot of talk about the everything bubble, right? You know, records amounts of liquidity, valuations went insane. You have monkey JPEGs trading at, you know, for millions of dollars, right? There was kind of ridiculous valuations everywhere. And Bitcoin, no doubt, was part of that. Part of what I like to focus on, and I think, Pomp, you kind of have a similar framework as well, is what comes after, right? So Bitcoin's obviously trading, you know, over 50% down from its all-time high. For Bitcoin, that's nothing new. I mean, it's done that, you know, 5 or 6 times throughout its history, probably a lot more. It's inherently very, very volatile. But really, what I like to focus on is this unprecedented liquidity regime. And now kind of with this liquidity tide pulling back, and I think, you know, eventually we see some, you know, kind of a deflationary credit crunch. That's what it looks like we're kind of in the beginning stages of, despite the consumer price inflation. We're seeing asset deflation everywhere. What's on the other side of it, right? You know, interest rates, we've been in this, you know, 4-decade downtrend in interest rates, debt demographics. A lot of really, really smart people have raised a lot of concern about this. What comes next? And a lot of people have continued to kind of talk about the wealth inequality and the societal unrest. And so I'm kind of skirting around your original question about how are these publicly traded miners holding up? Well, I think the reality is they're going to do quite well, because what comes on the other side of this, in my personal opinion, maybe not financial advice, but I certainly am putting my money where my mouth is I think Bitcoin as a global monetary asset, with what we talked about as a digital commodity, synthetic commodity with a production cost that's ever rising and the only absolutely scarce thing in the world, is going to do quite well. Like, that's my thesis. I've said it almost, you know, every week on your show, and whether Bitcoin's a 60K or 30K, that's my fundamental belief. And so I think Bitcoin's holding up quite well. We're in definitely, you know, kind of the pullback of the liquidity tide. And so can it go lower? Yeah, of course. Bitcoin could always get cut by, you know, by 50%. But does that change long-term thesis for me? No. And so I guess that's my long-winded answer.
The other thing that seems to be playing out right now is obviously the inflation story. 8.5% was the peak. Maybe it goes higher. Maybe we have peaked. Remains to be seen. While we've been talking here, somebody tweeted out and said, damn, Snoop Dogg's got a personal blunt roller. Gets paid $40,000 to $50,000. And he quote tweeted and he said, inflation, the salary has gone up. And forget for a second what that person does. But the fact that we have people like Snoop Dogg, right? Cardi B the other day tweeted out and said, you know, when are we going to announce that we're in a recession? When are they going to admit it? What is the importance of these folks in kind of culture that are celebrities, musicians, you know, athletes, et cetera, talking about inflation, talking about recessions? Like, this seems not what people would have expected. So, like, how do you read that?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly unprecedented, right? I mean, since the great financial crisis, we had a ton of monetary debasement, but it wasn't really felt in consumer price markets. It wasn't felt by the average Joe. It just kind of nestled itself in the bond market, in real estate markets, in the equity markets. And so now it's showing up at the gas pump. It's showing out in the shelves in the grocery store, and people are really taking note and upset about it, right? So that's why there's kind of the political pressure on the establishment, on Jerome Powell, to do something about it. And unfortunately, it's kind of interesting, because monetary policy, you know, for shattered supply chains and, you know, for geopolitical tensions like Russia and the Ukraine conflict, it's really maybe not the best tools to kind of tighten monetary policy as we're plunging towards a global recession. And so, you know, it's definitely interesting to see kind of the cultural reaction to, you know, inflation at 4-decade high. And I think, you know, even though Bitcoin is 50% off the highs, I think it educates, you know, people on the need for a sound monetary instrument. And that's why, you know, people like me and you are continuing to just kind of beat the drum on this and kind of hold steady with our tune, right?
When you start to think about the legislation that's being put forward by Senator Lummis and Senator Gildebrand, is this important because they're talking about it, or do you think that it'll actually have an impact if we can get, you know, a very clear regulatory framework? We know exactly who oversees it. Like, what is your thought process on like how this impacts the market if it actually comes to fruition?
Yeah, I haven't actually dug too far deep into the legislation. I know it kind of got leaked last night, but I think for the longest time, I mean, Bitcoin's been regulated for you know, since basically Mt. Gox. Like, they've had some kind of oversight over the kind of industry, but it's, you know, there's been some confusion about whether, you know, Bitcoin's a commodity or it's a security. Is it the CFTC or the SEC? like what regulatory body is overlooking this industry. And really it's just kind of been a bunch of regulatory agencies winging it and not really knowing. And so I think oversight's good. I mean, I'm certainly not in favor of anything that's too harsh, or, you know, to kind of, I don't want anyone to stamp down on innovation. But certainly, you know, oversight and kind of, just some more clarity would I think probably be good, especially, you know, following the craziness that we've seen over the last couple of months. It certainly wouldn't be too bad to get some more clarity from Washington.
I definitely agree with that. When you start to think through, also, I guess that regulatory clarity should see, should allow more institutions to allocate. Does that flip us back into an environment though, where the macro, economy plays more of a role because we have people who treat Bitcoin as a risk on asset and now we're susceptible, to interest rates and kind of Fed policies and things like that. And like, how do you think about that dynamic? Cause it seems like a lot of those individual organizations that, purchased Bitcoin in 2020, 2021 risk off environment, they all dump Bitcoin drops, correlation to NASDAQ goes, you know, through the roof. Now there's a little bit of a decoupling, a little less of a correlation, and we may be going back towards more of like an individual or a pleb-led, you know, dollar cost averaging of Bitcoin. Like, how do you think about the relationship between the institutions and Bitcoin if there is regulatory clarity?
Yeah, this is why I kind of am really in favor of these kind of long consolidation periods, or not in favor of them, but I don't mind them at all. You know, Bitcoin just kind of consolidated at around 10,000 for a couple of years. And everyone that wasn't, passionate about it, that wasn't kind of in the industry, forgot about it, you know, thought it was dead. And all of a sudden Bitcoin's revived and is trading around 60K and everyone loves it again. And at 30,000, it's dead again. And so certainly that NASDAQ correlation, that risk on factor is still at play. If the equity markets drop 10% next week, I think Bitcoin's not insulated, that's for sure. But I think that's kind of a natural progression of it, in a similar way that I think equity markets almost were monetized in a way, in the sense that, you know, savings in your bank account weren't safe. The bond market wasn't safe. Negative real yield. So what did people do? They plowed money into tech stocks because it's almost like treated like a savings account for them in 2020 and 2021. And so kind of the two asset classes dropping in tandem, to me kind of made sense. And so while I do think just because of the strength of the dollar and the network effect that the dollar actually has, kind of being entrenched around the world as a global reserve currency, and the fact that it's the denominator of BTC USD, you know, the exchange rate, there's certainly going to be, you know, Bitcoin's going to be impacted by interest rate hikes, interest rate cuts, quantitative easing, quantitative tightening, and that's completely natural. But I think, again, to kind of put the long, you know, the long-term end game view in mind, what's, you know, are they going to stop printing money? Are they going to stop debasing the dollar? Is it politically possible or feasible to stop monetary expansion? And I think everybody knows the answer to that. So for me, that's why I'm perfectly content with just kind of biding my time and playing the waiting game.
Yeah. When you start to think about many of the companies in the space, we've seen Coinbase, we've seen Gemini, layoffs, hiring freezes, rescinding job offers. There's many others that, you know, haven't been publicly announced, et cetera. What's your read on that? Like, will the development stop? Will people stop moving into the industry? How do you think of it?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's certainly kind of, there was some excess in terms of, I saw, you know, FTX today said, actually, we're not cutting back anybody and we're still in growth mode. And so, you know, it definitely varies by company or by exchange. But yeah, I think, you know, if you look at, say, the monthly trading volumes of a Coinbase, right, it's far off from its 2021 highs. And I think that makes sense. Obviously there's some kind of, you know, individual decisions that had to be made by management. Maybe there was some, you know, ill-advised moves that were made during the bull market, that they now have to, you know, change that were in a bear. I think it's natural. And obviously the volatility of the crypto market in general kind of makes these ebbs and flows, of the actual prices, but also of, you know, these companies themselves and the valuations of these companies, very volatile with it. And so I think it's natural. It's obviously very tough to see people, you know, getting laid off. But I think honestly, this is, for better or worse, this was actually the intent of the Fed and the intent of Jerome Powell is to, you know, kind of cool down the business cycle and actually, you know, kind of reverse the wealth effect for better or worse. And so that's what's happening. It's not even crypto specific. We're seeing this across the tech industry. And I think it's, you know, kind of trickling down to other industries as well. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, one other thing that I keep coming back to is this idea of Lightning development. It feels like Lightning is taking the long time horizon. And, you know, obviously there's no equivalent of yield farming or kind of a, I don't know, a balance sheet full of assets that can just be used to incentivize people. Like, it's very much an organic growth story. Where do you see us currently there? Right. And do you see any changes because of price or because of macro environment or anything like that?
Yeah, Lightning's one of the most fascinating aspects of Bitcoin that seemingly no one talks about. It's just kind of a bunch of like a bunch of gritty developers under the surface, just kind of like grinding in silence, just shipping product and shipping development, you know, kind of born in the depths of the bear market. It was actually released in the beta was released in 2016. SegWit happened in 2017, which enabled the Lightning Network to exist. And then really, I think the growth, the actual growth in the building of the public network was in 2018, 2019. So here we are in 2022, and there's actually a ton of business applications that are being built on top of it, the Strikes of the world, et cetera. Also kind of open source applications. So it's not going to steal the headlines. Compare it to the total value locked of some DeFi protocol, right, that incentivizes you to use it with the native token itself, and it looks like it's a nothing burger. But it's actually, I think, one of the most important aspects in all of the industry in terms of Bitcoin's development and ability for it to scale. Bitcoin was never going to scale in the base layer. And I think that's where the big blockers went astray in the fork wars, thinking that all of, you know, the world's total transactions could scale in the base layer. That's just not really feasible. So the Lightning Network and stuff that's being built on top of the Lightning Network is super, super fascinating. And I think it's one of the most undercovered kind of stories in this industry.
Got it. And one last question I have for you before we let you go is you tweeted yesterday the producer price index by commodity, and it's all commodities. And it's high, newsflash. It's actually higher than where it was in 2008, 2009 during the global financial crisis. How do you think of this and the importance of paying attention to it in the coming months?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously the story. It's interlinked with the kind of the CPI inflation. Commodities are the story. And after getting no love for decades on end, they suddenly matter again. You know, energy, raw materials, like that, this goes into everything. And I think really we're going to need to see the rate of change or kind of the year over year readings on this start to come down. I think it naturally will as the business cycle slows down. But this is, you know, this is the biggest story probably in finance, is that inflation, CPI inflation says it's 8%, right? But the producer price index or commodities inflation, it's saying inflation is not 8%. It's actually 15%, 20%, 25%. This same reading in Germany is 30%. And so this is, you know, every bond investor in particular, every fixed income investor should be looking at this. And we've talked a lot about bond yields and the negative real yield environment. And this just kind of highlights the craziness of our world today. And so, you know, one of the biggest stories, unchecked monetary debasement and inflation, and how it all ends is going to be quite interesting to see. I think we're living through historic times.
Yeah. I am. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think many people know what's going to happen. But I think describing this as a historic time that will be covered in history books is probably the best way to put it. And one of my pieces of advice to people right now is pay attention, learn, take notes, pay attention to what's happening. Because if you're young, you're likely to have many more boom and bust cycles in your life if you're fortunate enough to kind of live long enough. And you can learn a lot right now because some of the stuff we have not seen before, and some of it is just a replay of history.
That's a great way to say it. Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't have all the answers, just kind of learning with everyone else, but definitely historic times. And I think on the other side of this, we'll look back and say it was certainly unprecedented.
Yeah. All right, where can we send people to find you on the internet?
Yeah, just kind of today's slide deck was something we covered in last week's Bitcoin Magazine Pro newsletter. It's just kind of focusing on the Bitcoin mining industry, macro backdrop, derivatives, on-chain metrics. We like to cover it all. There's a free and paid tier, so give that a look. I'm hanging out on Twitter for the most part. That's where you can find me. Appreciate you having me on, Pomp.
Amazing. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you every single week. And I know people learn a lot, so I appreciate you coming on. And anyone who's not following Dylan on Twitter, what are you doing? Let's go. Get on it. We'll talk next week, buddy.
Cheers.
All right. Later. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to try to transition to get a new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to pompscryptocourse.com. We've developed a curriculum with the top teams across the industry. It's a 3-week intensive training program with over 50 events packed into that 3-week time period. Go to pompscryptocourse.com to learn more, and I'll meet you guys for the next episode.